The Precinct Omega Weekly Podcast is supported by Horizon Wars Zero Dark, sci-fi skirmish war games in a fallen earth. Visit Wargame Vault at wargamevault.com and search for Zero Dark.
Welcome to a new era of the Precinct Omega Game Design Podcast. I know, that's a clunky title. I was going to go back to the old Battlecast title I used to have way back when, but it turns out that there's a Battlecast show on YouTube, and I didn't want it to look like I was trying to sponge off their audience. Check them out, though. They're pretty cool. I have been podcasting on and off for a while now, but I restarted things in April 2020, not long after lockdown began, as a way of testing myself to see if I could do a weekly podcast. I didn't intend for it to become a scripted thing, but without a script, I tend to rattle on for ages, and I'm not great at sticking to the point. So until I have someone else to present this podcast with me, I'll keep scripting it. Seriously though, if you'd like to join me for a show, whoever you are, you would be very welcome. All I ask is that you bring an opinion, a heart, and a brain. You'll also need to have a couple of hours free on either a Thursday afternoon or a Friday morning. If you also have something of your own to promote, that's totally fine with me. But even if you're just an interested gamer, I'd still love to have you on. If you'd like to give it a try, email me at precinctomega@gmail.com. Anyway, this started as a weekly news thing, but quickly morphed into using the news as a prop to talk about issues of business and culture within the tabletop miniatures hobby. 6 months in, I've missed only 1 week due to being on holiday, and I thought it was time to change a little. It's always hard to find enough interesting news to hang a discussion on every week, so I'm going to keep the news and discussion format, but shift it to alternating weeks, and probably push the time out for those from 20 minutes to more like 30 minutes, as lots of episodes have been that long or longer anyway. But in the weeks that I'm not doing the news, I'll instead be going back to the Precinct Omega Battlecast format that I started with years ago before getting pulled back into the grind of everyday life and having to ditch it. And so this week is the first of those weeks when I'll be looking more broadly at aspects of game design. My emphasis in these episodes is going to be on miniature strategy games, and I'm going to generally assume that if you're writing your own games, you want them to be successful. Now, whether that means financially or in some other form doesn't really matter. The assumption is that you want your games to be well known, well received, and widely played. Now, not everyone who writes games has those as objectives. For many folks, game writing like this is just a hobby they use to entertain themselves and a few of their closest friends. But I tend to believe that having a successful game isn't just about good marketing, and that there is some degree of connection between a well-designed game and one that is played a lot. Some might say that this is hopelessly naive. I prefer to think of it as optimistic. But with that in mind, I'm going to start off this series of fortnightly episodes by discussing some of the components that I think contribute to good design. I'll give examples from my experience of these concepts executed well, which sometimes will be my own games, of course, and examples of them done less well or even poorly. And I'll try to be self-critical enough to make sure that my own games sometimes feature in that aspect too. So let's begin this week with what I call conceptual efficiency. Conceptual efficiency is when you make rules work hard. Rather than inventing a new mechanic, you reuse an existing one, or you modify a rule to do more than one thing. When I wrote Horizon Wars, I was really happy with the mechanic for shooting that involved rolling d12s and adding up the results to make hits. But when I wrote Zero Dark, I achieved conceptual efficiency by taking this mechanic and applying it to almost every test in the game. Want to shoot your opponent, heal your ally, sneak past a sentry, hack a computer, or persuade a civilian to come with you? The mechanic is the same in every case. You can just have a different stat and target number. Then I doubled down on the efficiency by allowing characters to achieve bonus successes, so a single roll not only determines success or failure, but also what else you can do after that in the same activation. But for a less onanistic example that really exemplifies this idea, I recently picked up a second-hand copy of Blood Red Skies, the World War II dogfighting game. It was recommended to me by Gav Thorpe.
Shameless name drop alert. Shameless name drop alert.
As it makes use of some terrific pieces of design efficiency that echoed some ideas I was discussing with my patrons. The aspect of efficiency I particularly want to pull out of this is the idea it has of advantage and disadvantage. Now, this terminology has gained some popularity in recent years, not least thanks to D&D 5e, which has a similar concept. But whereas in D&D it represents a pretty abstract idea that can be applied to hundreds of different circumstances, in Blood Red Skies it is a specific placeholder for another concept, that of altitude. Now, I wrestled with altitude in Horizon Wars, and although I was moderately pleased with the outcome, it still left something to be desired, and I think the solution in Blood Red Skies is very elegant. Rather than force players to track altitude, a plane simply is either neutral, advantaged, or disadvantaged. Generally, this means that an advantaged plane is at a higher altitude to planes that aren't advantaged. It can kind of mean other things too, but that's the basics. And the way the game uses the idea of advantage is equally clever. Advantage affects a plane's relationship with other planes. A plane can only shoot at an enemy plane in a lower advantage state. So an advantaged plane can shoot at a neutral or disadvantaged one, whilst a neutral plane can only shoot at a disadvantaged one. And a disadvantaged plane can't shoot at anyone. Given that shooting your opponents is a vital way to earn the boom counters you need to win a dogfight, this is an incredibly clever use of the concept to limit players' ability to bring weapons to bear on a target. But advantage is also a resource that can be earned or spent. Performing certain manoeuvres requires a plane to spend advantage. This means becoming disadvantaged, like going into debt tactically. All of this is incredibly elegant and makes me very happy. But there is also a different form of efficiency, which is physical efficiency. Conceptual efficiency costs nothing but brain power. The ideas we've already discussed can be used by anyone making a similar game, and indeed, I've already drafted something very like this for Infinite Dark, although I admit it's not currently as clever as the ideas expressed in Blood Red Skies. But physical efficiency is when a design challenge is overcome by throwing money at the problem until it goes away. The ultimate example lies in modern digital wargames, which eliminate all of the physical obstacles inherent in tabletop miniatures wargaming by moving them to digital platforms. It's one big lump of physical efficiency that ought to solve pretty much every other design problem you care to name. In Blood Red Skies, the great example of physical efficiency is the proprietary basing system for the planes. The round base holds a card insert that tells you something about the quality of the pilot. It's very like the same thing that Fantasy Flight Games did with their proprietary X-Wing bases. But Warlord's BRS version goes a step further by having a flight stalk that can be shifted into one of three positions. Plane is level means neutral. Plane is pointing up means advantaged. Plane is pointing down means disadvantaged. Now, in many ways, this could be seen more as a gimmick than as an example of design efficiency. After all, there are lots of ways you could indicate those things differently. You could use a telescopic flight stand. You could use counters. I'm sure there's some way magnets could be involved, because there usually is. But Warlord turned the proprietary flight stand into a physical efficiency by tying in a manoeuvre template and movement ruler that rely upon the use of a base with the exact radius as the proprietary stand. I'm very ambivalent about physical efficiencies like this, and I'm conscious that there may be an element of small game designer being salty about large game designers in this. On a purely academic level, I reject most physical efficiencies as a lack of imagination. This emerges from my non-gamer background. I was often asked by business leaders how to fix a particular people problem, and the answer was invariably one that I call directions to Dublin. This is an old joke in which a man, hopelessly lost in the back roads of County Wicklow, asks a local how to get to Dublin. The man looks at him for a moment and then replies, "Well, I wouldn't start from here." In these cases, the problem has only arisen because of failures in procedure much, much earlier in the process. Classically, the question is, how do we get rid of this person out of the business, when nothing has been done to document their misbehaviour or feed back to them that they were doing anything wrong, but the misbehaviour has reached a point at which there's no conceivable way that they can remain employed. The answer is that they should have started addressing the problem 12 months ago instead of hoping it would get better on its own. But seeing as we do have to start from here, the only practical solution is to throw money at the problem until it goes away, in what's called, in UK employment law, a settlement agreement. Physical efficiencies are often the settlement agreements of game design. They are expensive solutions to problems that could be fixed with just having better rules earlier in the design process. But in BRS's case, I think that would be unfair. You see, physical efficiencies also provide bigger companies in the industry with another tool that's purely commercial. They prevent others from interfering with their market share. Now let's take X-Wing for example. Loads of people offer 3D printable models for the game on Thingiverse and similar. And you can buy X-Wing scale ships of various sorts from toy ranges like Micro Machines. But you can't put those things into the game itself without using the X-Wing design efficiencies. They're bases, base inserts, maneuver dial, cards and counters. So even if you buy a bespoke ship off, say, Shapeways, you'll still need to spend money buying an X-Wing product to have the peripherals you need to put your new purchase onto the tabletop. And part of me admires this kind of commercial savvy. Making sure you always get your cut out of anyone playing your game is what allows companies like FFG to be successful. And them being successful is what means we get great games like Legion and Battlestar Galactica. But when I first started writing miniatures games with Scrapyard and Mechawar, it was because I was pretty much broke. I couldn't drop £10 on a single model, let alone the £20 or £30 some required. I needed a game that I could play for next to nothing. The original design brief for Mechawar was a game for which you can get everything you need to play for less than £10. And I meant everything. Minis, dice, counters, and rules. And although I'm not as rigorous in demanding cheapness in my games these days, perhaps a side effect of being comfortably off now, I still cling to the idea that a company should persuade customers to want to buy their products, not force them to do so. This is why the miniatures that I'm going to be releasing for Zero Dark next year will be interesting, but generic hard sci-fi soldiers, not mandatory playing pieces. And I hope that this will continue to be the guiding principle behind the stuff I sell for my games. They should be things people want to buy because they're cool and fun, not because you can't play without them. Good commercial sense in this respect is both at war with and in cahoots with good design sense, because on the one hand, the physical efficiency compromises good design, but on the other, being able to throw money at a problem does create some cool solutions. And the whole advantages pointing up thing with BRS is a great example. It's not just a visual reminder. It also gives the sense of shifting perspectives and screaming a sense that are part of the mythology of aerial dogfighting. However, there's a risk of getting into bed with money in design. And that is illustrated in what I said was the ultimate expression of physical efficiency, the digital war game. I recently got to moderate a panel discussion at the Steam Tabletop Fest with some cool folks from the world of digital wargames, and I'll pop a link in the episode description if you'd like to see that. I do recommend it. But one of the things we discussed was the experiential difference in playing wargames between the tabletop and the digital platform. And something I don't think we went into enough is the difference in experience between the designer and the player. In a digital game, the designer is given near infinite freedom to add hidden levels of granularity and complexity with the confidence that the calculations can all be done invisibly by the device. Players don't need to know precisely how any given interaction is resolved. They just need to know whether a desired outcome is likely or unlikely and what they can do to weight that in their favour. Everything else can be concealed. This permits levels of subtlety that would be impossible in a tabletop pen and paper game. But it also means that the player is entirely insulated from the mechanics and calculations to the point that they have no practical way to change them. In a tabletop game, meanwhile, designers and players sit as near equals. The mechanics are mostly laid bare. The game is, for most purposes, open source, and the only tools you need to hack it are a brain and an imagination. There are exceptions, such as the methods by which a unit's stats are calculated and balanced, but in a game like Horizon Wars or Zero Dark, even these are visible. And in a game like Warhammer 40,000, the answer in any case is largely a mixture of guesswork, intuition, and playtesting. Things that come pre-packaged with the brain and imagination you're already using. And although the digital war game is the ultimate example of physical efficiency and throwing money at problems to make them disappear, it is also the ultimate example of how these efficiencies create a gulf between player and designer, putting a good deal too much power to dictate what play looks like into the designer's hands. And this scales. The more problems a designer solves by throwing money at them, the less power is left in the hands of players to innovate and explore the game space of what the designer has given them. But it would be wrong to give you the idea that physical efficiencies are always a bad idea. In both Horizon Wars and Zero Dark, I make use of counters. They are a core mechanic in Horizon Wars, and in Zero Dark, they're pretty important for keeping track of states and such like. And these are physical efficiencies. Miniatures, even, these too are physical efficiencies. Of course, they aren't proprietary efficiencies in my games. There's nothing forcing you to make use of a particular design or style of counter, and you should be able to reuse lots of counters from other games. And the whole point of my games is to give you excuses to use miniatures you love from a whole range of manufacturers. That's just me outsourcing design and supply to someone else. And I wouldn't want you to think that the use of proprietary physical efficiencies makes a game bad. All of the games I've mentioned in this episode are good games. Yes, reluctantly, I'll admit that even Warhammer 40,000 is a good game. Just. What I'd like you to take away from this episode is the idea that different efficiencies change the dialogue between the game designer and the game player. A conceptual efficiency is the opening to a great conversation, the kind that needs at least a second bag of crisps to see it through. A physical efficiency is a reluctant agreement to compromise, and a proprietary physical efficiency is just plain shutting that conversation down and moving on to something else. But not every gaming experience needs to be a conversation. X-Wing, if we're going to push this metaphor, is more like a TED Talk. It's interesting, it's mind-expanding, it's entertaining, it might even make you laugh, but you don't get to explore it much deeper without the designer telling you how. Blood Red Skies, then, is more like a seminar, where you can interrupt and ask questions, but you know who's in charge and it's not you. I'd like my games to be a bit more like meeting a friend in the pub, putting the world to rights over a few pints and the aforementioned packet of crisps. And yes, I'm aware of the irony inherent in telling you that I want my games to be a dialogue through a medium in which I monologue at you for 20 minutes. But like I said at the start, if you'd like to join in this conversation, tell me I'm wrong, or just bring a perspective of your own to any part of the tabletop games hobby and business, drop me a message at precinctomega@gmail.com and we'll make it happen. Next week, we'll be back to the news, but before I go, I would be remiss not to mention the fact that I have just released the PDF edition of Zero Dark Operation Nemesis on Wargame Vault. It's currently riding high in the top 10 bestsellers, so if you go to wargamevault.com, you should just be able to find it right there. And if you've not yet got Zero Dark, there's a bundle of both books at a substantial discount. I think that's enough self-promotion for one episode, so I'll talk to you again next week.
The Precinct Omega Game Design Podcast is supported by our patrons on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Precinct Omega to help us continue developing new games and creating hobby content for wargames enthusiasts all over the world.